Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
In Albuquerque, New Mexico, and now in Austin, Texas, Jana Pocop is a self-proclaimed nerd with a penchant for pop songs and a do-it-yourself Texas troubadour. She has toured Ireland and the UK and played many festivals in the UK, Scotland, and the US, and is a Careville New Folk finalist this year. Jana has released 3 solo EPs, as well as several singles, teaches songwriting workshops, and her new solo album, The Astronaut, is available now. Jana Pocop, welcome to Song Creating.
Thanks so much, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. Now, you're coming to us from Austin, Texas?
Yeah, I'm in Austin today where it's actually not 100 degrees, so that's really nice.
Yeah, we've heard about Austin's heat. So I traveled to Austin with my wife about 4 years ago in February, and I think we hit Austin's winter. It was rainy and cloudy.
Sounds about right. Once a year that happens.
So what was it like growing up in Albuquerque, New Mexico?
I loved it. I will say I don't think I appreciated it as much until I left. I think that happens with kids in their hometowns, but New Mexico is just stunningly beautiful, sunsets and mountains, and I had a good time growing up. My parents were pretty cool and let me start playing guitar, taking lessons when I was 11, so that kind of became my thing when I was young, and I had guitar lessons every week, and then I went to a high school, Manzano High School in Albuquerque, that had a guitar program, so I had guitar every day for high school.
Wow.
So I think that really set me on a path.
Wow. Did any of your classmates go into the music business as well, given all that background?
Not that I know of or have kept in touch with, or definitely, as far as I know, not in the folk genre. Maybe they're out there playing in other bands. It's interesting. I graduated in 2001, so we're right on the precipice of a bunch of us are connected on Facebook, but we've lost track of a lot of people too. So I'm not sure. I hope so. I bet.
So did you pick up the guitar at this time and just fall in love and say, this is what I want to do? Or was it that kind of experience, or did you ease into it?
It kind of was. I remember mm-hmm. writing an essay in seventh or eighth grade. It was one of those write about what you want to do when you grow up kind of things. And I said, I want to be a guitar player. And my teacher, I was so mad. He said, nice essay, but you know, that's not really something you can make a living at. And I said, look at all my heroes. They do this for a living. And I don't know if that set me on a path to prove him wrong or what, but
okay.
Here we are. I haven't written him a note to tell him what I'm doing, but maybe he knows.
you really got to send that note out. I hope you do. Now that you're such a better writer, do they still have the guitar program there?
As far as I know, they do. For whatever reason, that public high school in Albuquerque is really music focused. So they had a great choir mm-hmm. program, and they built a whole music annex while I was there. So we had a little recording studio, and Mr. O, I need to talk about Mr. O, David Ostrovitz, ran that guitar program for, I think, 30 years, putting up with hundreds of kids a day, all strumming acoustic guitars and teaching us Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix and not going absolutely insane. So Mr. O is a champion, and we still have coffee sometimes when I go home. So he's still around.
Oh my yeah. gosh, that's fantastic. Usually you just have the band kids, you know, orchestra and the band. I imagine you had that as well.
Yeah, we had a great band and orchestra. And then, yeah, I don't know what got the guitar program at that school. I think a couple other Albuquerque high schools had it, but not every one. So I totally lucked out by my parents buying a house in the right neighborhood, I guess. So,
so did you start becoming creative and writing at that time?
Yeah, I always wrote. I wrote poems from like the time I could rhyme words. I think my mom's got a cat hat mat poem that I wrote in kindergarten, just sheer brilliance, but no. And so I was always a writer, and then I started playing guitar, and I lucked into, about that time, late 90s was the kind of the Lilith Fair cultural phenomenon, and everyone was talking about women in music, and a bunch of those women attached with Lilith Fair happened to be great songwriters and played acoustic guitar. So it was a really easy roadmap for me to just be like, well, yeah, that's what I want to do. So I started trying to cobble together words and music, and that takes a little while, I think. And I tried to write songs in high school. I probably wrote some bad ones, but I went to college. I stayed in Albuquerque for college. Apparently I couldn't leave. I went to the University of New Mexico and lived in the dorms, and there was an open mic at a coffee house down the street, and so hauled all my dorm friends down there one night and played an open mic, and I was like, oh, they'll clap for me if I do this. So I kept doing it.
It's amazing what validation will do for your ego.
Totally. I'm so grateful, because I'm pretty sure it wasn't awesome being, you know, I wrote this song in my dorm room 2 days ago, but they were very supportive, so it got me going.
So were your parents supportive at this time as well?
They had me in their mid-40s, so I was kind of bringing up the rear. All my siblings are 20 years older than me, so I call myself an oops baby. My mom says I'm a bonus, but we all know that there was a surprise aspect there.
Okay.
And I think that kind of made them chill out. They had raised three kids that my siblings are all cool. So they were probably like, well, we have this last one. Let's just make sure she like stays alive. And oh, she wants to play guitar. Fine. Great. Go for it. So they were always pretty supportive.
That's great. So no forced piano lessons, anything like that?
No, actually the guitar happened because my mom kept trying to get me into piano. And I regret this now, but I thought every kid takes piano. That's so lame. And I wanted to play drums, I thought. And they were like, that's too loud. What can we do? What's in the middle? And it was guitar, which turned out to be the best thing possible. So
so it sounds like you really started forming your chops in college?
Yeah, I started.
Or at least your performing chops.
Trying to perform and write consistently. That's all I did. I sat in my dorm room, aside from some homework, and tried to write songs about traveling and being on the road, which is something I hadn't done. So it's pretty funny.
So you were a poet, even though you may have been a first grade poet. How was it transitioning from writing poetry and then starting to add music to that? How did your writing have to change? Did you have to evolve or what?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. Is that I think there's a little magic sprinkled on top of how we ever end up writing a song, and then a lot of craft. And I think it took me a long time and just a lot of internal processing, listening to other songwriters, and trying to emulate them. And at some point you kind of get a feel for form and how lyrics are supposed to lie with the melody. It's such a weird combination of developing a musical style and your written word style or what you want to say. And it takes years, I think, for those to combine. Some people seem to come out of the gate fully formed, and I don't know how that works, but I think everyone grows into a more solid sense of themselves. But it took a while, and those early songs are not ones I've kept around. They're fun to listen to occasionally when, I don't know, my songwriter friends and I are sitting around, listen to this one from high school. But they were all essential at the time, and now, you know, every time I write a new song, I think this is my favorite. So that's always good.
So did you study creative writing in college or poetry? I'm thinking, like, you know, a lot of songs you could almost say are somewhat like limericks in that they rhyme. They've got a pattern. You know, then there's the poetry that is a couple words on one line and then many more words on the next line. You know, there's not really a pattern to it as much. It's
Totally.
Might work a little better in that type of poem. But did you write this way? Was your poetry like this? And was it something that you could transition into songs, or did you have to start all over again writing poetry?
Yeah, then I think there's value to learning how everybody did it and the forms and all that. And then there's value to tweaking it to your own devices. I did take one poetry class in college. I was a history major, so I did a lot of reading and writing, but a lot of it wasn't very poetic. But I learned a lot about how the world works, which I learned nothing about how the world works now looking back, but we thought we learned everything about how the world works back then. I did write all my way through college because of that. And just, I did take a poetry class that was really, our professor's name was V.B. Price, and he's the son of Vincent Price, the horror actor. And he lives in Albuquerque, and he's a beautiful writer and poet, and he teaches at UNM. So that was pretty, pretty fun.
If he's got his father's voice, it must be awesome to hear him recite poetry.
Yeah, he was a great reader in class. Yeah, you always wanted to listen to Barrett talk. Yeah.
Okay, so take us from Albuquerque to, I think it was 2006, where you moved to Austin, Texas. Now, did you move there and jump in, hook, line, and sink, jump in with all 4 feet? How did that all go?
All 4 feet and all my fins and my flippers and yeah. I look back on my 20-something self and I'm pretty in awe of her. While I was in college, I was into all these songwriters. I loved Mary Chapin Carpenter, is still my just Buddha writing hero. I just think she's beautiful. And Sean Colvin and Ani DiFranco and all these people. And right about that time when I was in college in the old days, Napster and just, you moved into a dorm, you had a computer, and you spent all night long downloading files illegally off the internet. It wasn't taboo yet. So I was...
You know, nobody's listening. Your secret's safe with me.
No one report me now. Statute of limitations.
Right.
So I was just consuming so much music, and it led you down these rabbit trails of, well, I like this person and they're on this record. And it led me to some Texas artists, namely Terry Hendricks and Susan Gibson, who are both from around here. And it turns out Susan came to talk in my freshman music appreciation class, which was all classical music, but our professor was amazing. Her name is Laura Dwyer. We're still Facebook friends. And she had traveling musicians come talk to us. And I was sitting there as a freshman. It was kind of a turning point. Susan wrote a song called Wide Open Spaces that the Dixie Chicks covered. And so she was a legit working songwriter, and she's a heck of a performer. And she was standing there while I was a freshman. I'm like, well, I'm going to get this history degree to keep my parents happy, but I want to do that. So, and then Terry Hendricks is connected to Susan, and she plays with Lloyd Maines, who is kind of one of the giants of Texas music, and also a father of Natalie Maines, the Dixie Chick. So it was all coalescing for Texas, and all these people were very kind and supportive. And I would meet up with Susan when she came through town, and, I just thought, you know, if these songwriter women are kicking butt in Central Texas, that might be a place to land. So I decided, I just made my roommate come out here and help me find an apartment when we graduated. And I rented it for $400 a month and moved to Austin, which seems incredible. But got to know more people as I went. But I had those anchors of Terry and Susan, and yeah, it was invaluable.
So were you able to jump into performing right away or getting gigs, or were you waiting tables too? Did you put your history degree to work?
I got the government desk job for 1 year. I don't know how. I had the history degree, and I was a nerd. I was already blogging and stuff. That was a big deal in the 2000s. So I got this job with the 4-H department at the county government because they needed an admin, but they wanted someone who could blog. And I was like, well, that's me. So I did that. And at the same time, great question, I was not stage ready. Albuquerque is a beautiful city, but in terms of performance opportunities and level of just pro artist, I mean, there's some great pros there, but the scene is just smaller, you know? And so you don't get as many opportunities and you don't get to cut your teeth as much. So coming here where there's live music every night, and like I live down the street from Maria's Tacos where Cindy Cash Dollar played on Wednesdays or so, you know, it's just ridiculous. The amount of talent, on any given day, all night long, you could see these amazing people. And I thought, well, I need to work a lot. So I found a music school. I'd seen a band play called Porter Davis. They are wonderful, a trio. And Dan Barrett, who is the lead singer and guitar player in that band, mentioned in their newsletter that he was opening a music school called Red Leaf School of Music. And I went and clicked, and on his site, there was like, you know, guitar lessons, voice lessons, and then down at the bottom, I think he called it professional track. And I thought, that's folk music grad school. That's what I need. That's why I moved here. And I guess, I don't know, I've always loved to learn, and I've always been okay with being a learner and a beginner. So something about that process appealed to me. Like, go to Dan, have him show me the way. So I showed up at Red Leaf like every night after work and do a voice lesson or a guitar lesson, or we'd go over my songs. And I was there for a few years. Then I quit the government job and I started working at Red Leaf a little bit. And Dan helped me just form way more of who I was as an artist, and I got way more experience and critique too, which hurts sometimes, but it, you know, forged in the fire, I guess. And we still make records together. He produced the new record, so it's been an invaluable relationship.
Have you gotten into co-writing? Is that a big thing in Austin, like it is in Nashville?
It's definitely not as big as it is in Nashville, but it's not, you know, it's not as regimented here. I think that people definitely do that, but also there is, I've talked about this with some friends, Austin is a very, like, I don't know if it's the Texan spirit of independence or whatever. Like, a lot of people stay in their lane and do their thing, but they have their people they co-write with. And I do too. I write a lot with my, she's one of my best friends, but also one of my favorite songwriters here is Shawnee Kilgore. And we write quite a bit. And I have in the past, I've written with Susan. After I got out of the government job while I was working with Dan, I also just started going on the road with Susan as her merch person, and that grew into a job as her booking agent and tour manager. And so I cut my teeth that way, traveling with Susan while learning the stuff from Dan. There was a lot going on that back then.
So you totally schmoozed your way into all of this.
Totally. If you offer to sell t-shirts, they'll let you go. They'll put you in the van.
All right. So have you been to Nashville? Have you traveled much?
A few times, not as much as I would like.
I'm curious about the differences between Austin and Nashville. They're both country music, you know, roots music, and they're both southern climates, and they're both music meccas. But what do you find is the difference or similarities between Nashville and Austin?
Yeah. So Austin has branded itself as the live music capital of the world, and is changing quite a bit, I would say, which I think every major city is right now. But when I got here, like I said, Grammy winners were playing the taco place down the street at happy hour because they wanted to, and everyone came to appreciate it. So Texans, I have found, just really love and appreciate songwriters and live music and people who play their own songs. And so there's always venues for that and opportunities to play. The house concert scene is really big here too. People just open up their backyards or their living rooms and we can go play, and people put money in the hat, and it's a great gig. And then Nashville, I'm not sure. Austin is trying a little bit. We have a BMI office here, the Songwriting Performing Rights Organization. But Nashville is so much more established with business, where you can go and co-write with people that song has a chance of going somewhere, whether it be to another artist or sync licensing, film and TV. And Austin has thus far kind of been lacking on the industry side. So we have the performance opportunities, but a lot of people do tend to leave for other pastures to kind of branch out their career. And then a lot of them do come back because the quality of musician here, and just that it's still kind of a laid back attitude, aside from the whole growth of the city and all that. But it's a really great community, but less established industry and stuff like that.
Okay, so you had the government job. You realized this is not for me. There's got to be more. When did you start playing out in a more professional way?
Yeah, I think I lasted at the government job for 16 months and then jumped ship and have cobbled it together ever since. But I started, you know, the other great thing about Austin is there's open mics galore that you can hit one most every night. So I started on that you have to get your chops up. And that leads to kind of songwriter showcases, or be the featured songwriter at the open mic, or play around with other songwriters kind of your same level. And so those gigs started to come. And then that was about the time I went on the road with Susan Gibson, and I got to open a fair amount of shows for her. And we'd travel all over. We'd go up to Montana and play the Rocky Mountain circuit, got Washington and Oregon. Then we'd go east to Georgia and South Carolina and all that. Susan was basically full-time on the road, and for several years I was just with her for all of it. So that really...
So did you have a backing band at this point? Or
mostly just Susan playing solo. Sometimes she had a great fiddle player named Marion Brackney, but usually we kept the touring... The dogs in the van, Susan always had dogs outnumbered the humans every time. So we traveled with multiple dogs and a couple of humans, and it was pretty fun.
Wow. So really it was just you and the guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I got used to playing, is just accompanying myself and developing that. And it's still how I have played with a band on a few occasions, and it's always amazing. And I go, why don't I do this more? And then the frugal part of me goes, well, I can just play guitar myself, you know?
Yeah. Not to mention having to get everybody's schedules all
exactly.
together all the time.
Totally.
So let's talk about your song, Money and Heart. And it is definitely about the music business and performing and living that life. And, there are a lot of lyrics in this song, and
there's a lot. Yeah.
It's also a rap tune. Have you written have you written other raps?
That is the one that has lasted. I dabbled in some more, and I'm like, maybe Money and Heart is all I really need to do. I don't know. It took me longer to learn the song, I believe, than to write it. Cause it just, I was writing it on tour with Susan. I was sitting in the passenger seat, just like typing in a Google Doc, I think, and trying to make it all fit. And then it's so many words.
So tell us a little bit more about what prompted this song.
I think it was, you know, being on Team Susan Gibson, where we book the shows, we travel to the shows, play the shows, we're constantly talking about how did that go? Where can we play next? How do we get more of an audience in this new market? All those business discussions we had, and then all the frustrations of, I mean, Susan is amazing, truly a one of a kind artist and wonderful performer, and then you go, well, how do we get how do we get the people to know about you? And we just talked about that all the time, and we had a lot of quality discussions and grew her career, and mine got to grow too over those years. But I think that song just stemmed from watching. When I first started with Susan, I think it was 2008, and so the CD wasn't totally dead yet, and she still, and all her peers that kind of came up in the 90s and 2000s, we're used to selling merch and like having that be part of a house payment every month, you know, from CD sales. And being in the van with Susan to then being like, oh, there's Spotify is a thing now. And Apple Music, well, it started with people are downloading songs from iTunes. But I saw the shift. And then when I was the merch girl, I would see people walk up to the merch table and look at the CD and go, oh, I'm going to download this instead of buy it. Or I streamed your record on Spotify later, and you could see the income change, and you could see, you know, just how the entire bed of that small ecosystem in Texas in the 90s and 2000s, and I assume everywhere, just totally changed. And how do we adapt to that? And we talked about that endlessly. And I think I tried to put it in a song and explain, you know, stuff's different, and then we're still going to do this anyway. This is what we were born to do or drawn into, and we can't not play music. But what if the market doesn't want to give artists their due anymore? You know, all those questions. That was just as rambly as the song. So,
well, this is not to say that artists are not insecure.
Right. That's true.
So I'm looking at all these lyrics, and is there a particular verse that that you really like that just nails it for you?
The one that jumped out is, I'm scared you might find me funny enough to like online. A thumbs up is cheaper than funneling nickels and dimes at a Bandcamp, iTunes, Spotify, Rhapsody. How much do you value the commerce and the melody? That's a thing. We could see nowadays supporting an artist, and I'm guilty of this with people I'm a fan of. I go and follow them on Instagram or whatever, and I heart their pictures, and I'm like, I'm a fan. Am I really a fan? We've been given so many different levels of engagement now, and some of them are so bare minimum, but we still call ourselves fans, versus in the old days it was, you know, I, you know, bought your vinyl and I went to your show, and like it just seemed that fans had way more skin in the game, if it were to be a fan of an artist. And I'm not saying it's bad now. It's cool that we're exposed to so much stuff and have access to so much news about what people are doing. But what is our level of engagement, and how do we show appreciation is a question.
Yeah, it's a tough question. And society now and marketing is so data driven, and you've got your YouTube likes, which I think are a primary indicator of popularity, of
right.
Legs, and it just seems to be, you know, anybody can just like something, as opposed to album sales.
I think you're right. I think the online markers show, they're the way to show a groundswell of interest now, and then I think you do see the difference. Some artists are legit growing their base, and you see it online, and then you go to their show and everyone's at their show, versus sometimes I think it falls apart where somehow they have all these YouTube views and then no one's at their gig. So you can kind of fudge it that way. But for the most part, it still is an excellent way to tell who's making moves in the business.
As you said, you were an early blogger. Have you kept up with the social media, and are you adept at that? Is that helpful to you?
I do. It's turned into a love-hate thing. I've actually also, while I was on the road with Susan so much, I did all her social media, and I always derived great joy and fun in it because we made silly videos and got to mess with graphics. And so other artists, Susan's peers would be like, can Jana help me? And I, there's only so much of me, but I started a side a consulting business called Social Thinkery, and that's kind of my other means of paying my rent in Austin these days, is helping other artists with their social media. I help with a lot of crowdfunding campaigns and stuff like that. So it's a beautiful way for artists to be creative and reach their fans and their friends and everybody, but it's, as we've seen in the last several years, it's also, you know, ripping the fabric of our country apart in other ways. So I struggle with, you know, I'm like, yeah, every artist should be active on social media. And then I'm like, to what detriment to your mental health? I don't know. It's so tough. It's tough.
So I'm liking the second verse, stomping flip-flops on the asphalt in the middle of the summer, making fun of those jerks driving by on their Yukons and Hummers. A lot of those Yukons and Hummers in Texas, right?
They are all around Austin. And funny, that line, I think, originated back when I was in college. I was the kid in flip-flops. We played all these outside gigs and all that. And I was not very politically active in college. But right about that time, there was a big protest. It was, this should be really obvious, it would have been 2004 or 2005. And so I was on a college campus during a big march and a protest, and I was kind of sitting there watching it. Now I look back, I was like, I should have been in on that, but
probably the Iraq War invasion.
Yep. Yeah, that actually was probably it. Yeah. I just had a blank on what time period that would have been. Cause there's so many things now. I thought about, you know, and it, yes, there is a lot of discussion about oil and where we get our oil and all that, and the Yukons and the Hummers and the gas guzzlers. And I think that just made an imprint as to the first, I think I wanted to be, you know, studied the Joan Baez's of our time and the Bob Dylans and all that. And I'm like, I want to say something with my music. And back then I was not succeeding because I was just trying to write any song at all and trying to figure out what I was trying to say. But looking back, that was formative. Like the time in my life where I realized songs could be powerful, and I couldn't quite put together how to make that work for me. But
so did you find that your time touring and working your way up, is it something that you almost feel like you need to experience in order to get your chops? You know, some people get famous very easily, very quickly, and others don't.
That's a great question. I think I'm so lucky I had Susan and Dan both as mentors early, because we talked about this a lot, the myth of the starving artist and the do you have to suffer for your art to really write good art. And I think part of me, probably that college kid, thought so, like, I gotta get really roughed up and go forge my own way. And you know, and I think just by nature of existing, life is hard. Regardless of if you have wonderful parents, they still mess you up in some ways, and the just being a human being on this planet is rough. And I honestly have come to the conclusion that part is hard enough to be, you know, dealing with as an artist and a writer and processing all these things. So there's no need to like purposefully make your life harder. And try to, you know, some people love the lifestyle of rolling up in a car and sleeping in the same car and not knowing where you're going to sleep that night, or couch surfing and all that. And I did that for a little bit, or sometimes on the road, Susan and I would, you know, she always had her van and I slept on many a couch or a guest bedroom, and it was good for a while. But after a bit of it, you're like, no, I think I want like a Hampton Inn or my own bed. You know, these are the decisions you start to make when you get into your mid-30s. And there's no shame in that game, because there's still just a plethora of stuff to process and write about. And I think maybe some people get scared, like, you know, if I don't get my heart broken 6 more times, what will I write about? You know, there's tons of it. Just look a little harder.
So are you more apt to be writing something non-fictional, or, you know, going off using your imagination and exploring other places?
I think I've always leaned into the confessional, more personal songwriter, like a Sean Colvin or a Mary Chapin. I think they're writing about stuff they're going through, versus that, like, I'm about to go to the Kerrville Folk Festival, and there's a whole genre of writer out there that's like, I'm going to tell you a story about Jed in 1896, you know, totally different thing. Also just as cool, but I've always kind of been more drawn to the confessional sort for sure.
So you're heading down to Kerrville in a couple of days. What will you be playing?
I am playing, so the New Folk competition, you enter two songs and I think they get 800 entries or something, and there's 24 of us that get to go compete. So I entered, they're both my space nerd, sad space nerd songs, one called Maps and one called Solar System. So,
oh, and this must be off the Astronaut album.
Yes, they're both on that record. And you play, this is handy, you play the ones you enter, so I don't even have to think about what I'm playing, which is nice. So takes the guesswork out. And that happens this Saturday. It's I'm starting to get slightly nervous, but it should be really fun.
Well, you've played a lot of folk fests all over. Is this still something that you're nervous at, or is Kerrville is just the big one?
Yeah, this is a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one, all right.
This is the most important weekend of your life, Jana. I mean, I have been to Kerrville quite a bit before, and some people go every year and camp for 3 weeks. I have not been able to do that because Jana doesn't camp, but but I've been out there a lot, and a lot of sweet people are out there. So I think that will soften the fear part, but knowing you're playing in a big amphitheater of people that come to listen to New Folk, and there's three judges writing things down. I'm going to have to do some major mental preparation for that part. I don't usually get nervous playing gigs, but this'll turn some, I don't know, turn some brain cells. Because I've been doing this since moved to Austin when I was like 23. So 15-ish years here. And finally, not that I have figured this all out, but I'm doing New Folk now is way better than 5 or 10 years ago. I would have just been an absolute wreck thinking everything was wet, like leaning on this. And now I know it's an honor to be in this competition because they like my songs and they're still my songs. These are the best things I've made thus far. You know, that's all I can offer. So I'm trying to go in with that perspective too. And I'll still freak out.
So you say Jana doesn't camp, but I watched the video of your song, Money and Heart, which is really cute. And it looks like you're playing in an old Airstream trailer. Is that just a prop?
Awesome question. Luckily and not luckily, I don't know what the right answer is. It was not a prop. I moved into a 1947 Spartan executive mansion in March of 2020.
Executive mansion. You are talking about the trailer, right?
That is a trailer. Yes. Yeah. They're fancy words. These 40s trailers they're tin cans, but it was long. It had a bathroom and all that kind of stuff. But I rented it from someone here in Austin, and 2020 was going to be like a busy year. I was going to travel a bunch. Shawnee and I had a tour set up in the summer, and I was like, cool, this will be nice to be. I'll have this small space that was affordable, which is harder to find in this city. And moved in March 2020, and like 2 weeks later, we did not leave our homes for a year. So then I really got to know that trailer, but it was a good space. It was a creative kind of all wood panel retro. It was neat.
It had a lot of character. Well, Jana Pocop, I can't thank you enough for your time. Listeners can read more about you and download your music, including your new album, Astronaut, at janapocop.com. And that is JANAPOCHOP.com. And there's all kinds of good stuff on your website. So thanks very much for joining us here.
Thank you, Steve. This is wonderful. Thank you so much for doing what you do. This is incredible.
And we're going to sign off listening to Jana Pocop and her song, Money and Heart.
Yay! Thanks, Steve.
Trying to put on the right face, I carried everything I knew inside of my guitar case. Hymns in the choir that came with an impossible key change, and I kept changing the key, and they kept looking at me strange, playing for for change at the checkout of a grocery. Playing for strange looks on the steps of my university. Playing for coffee like I wasn't worth anymore. And I got blood on my strings. It was my devotion to the hardcore. Spilling out unformed thoughts every night on the open mic. Spitting out deformed throbs in my heart when the time is right. Stomping flip-flops on the asphalt in the middle of the summer. Making fun of those jerks driving by in their Yukons and their Hummers. And we were earnest and naive and saviors. And it was all truthful. But some of these thoughts in our head never turned out to be useful. We thought we desired the lives of the beaten down troubadours. But martyrs don't walk through their own open doors. When the headphone meets the ear and the artist beats the fear, is there a system to this art? Is there money where there's heart? Now I'm scared you might find me funny enough to like online. A thumbs up is cheaper than funneling all those nickels and dimes into Bandcamp, into iTunes, into Spotify, into Rhapsody. How much do you value the commerce that comes in the melody? Am I a scroll through check-in, tiny light in your day? Or is this gonna be a currency on the level of the New York Exchange? My stock, my rise, and my fall. And I know that it might flatline, and my calves might start to burn from the rate of the incline. So you have to understand, I'm gonna do this without regards to time or cost or money or success. I'm talking yours, I'm talking mine, I'm talking nobody's gotta get undermined. But I'm gonna do this anyway, and I'm gonna hate this if I don't find a way. And I will not be the one who waits around for the next hope. Passivity, it's gonna string us all up faster than a good rope. And I want all these things to collide like money and art, and one we work hard for and one we think is hard. It pulls us out of the hell that happens to us every single day. And I say no doctor, no lawyer can perpetually save. But the headphone meets the ear and the artist beats the fear. Is there a system to this art? Is there money where there's hearts? Where there's hearts?
Listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.